listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. There's a box there for a reason. When marching to the beat of a different drummer can lead you over a cliff. In the martial arts, as well as in other areas of endeavor, you sometimes encounter people who are doing things very differently than others do, or claiming things that are contrary to common belief. Sometimes this is a good thing. Innovation is most definitely a source for positive change. Sometimes, however, people do things differently for the sole reason of being different, because their ego wants them to be singled out as opposed to truly seeking a better way. Let's look at some examples of each. When Nicolaus Copernicus and later Galileo made the assertion that the Earth orbits around the Sun, rather than the other way around, they were opposed by other natural philosophers, which is what they called scientists in those days, and in the case of Galileo, by the Catholic Church. Galileo was brought to trial for heresy by the Catholic Inquisition and ended his days under house arrest for having made this assertion. What is not taught in most science classes is how many natural philosophers at the time were also making their own claims about the natural world, and that the vast majority of these claims were wrong. In 1912, geologist Alfred Wegener proposed the hypothesis of continental drift. This is the idea that the Earth's continents have not always been in the positions relative to each other that they occupy today. Have you ever noticed that the east coast of South America bends at almost a right angle at Brazil, so that its eastern tip is like the corner of a square poking out into the Atlantic Ocean? Have you further noticed that to the east of South America, the coast of Africa has a similarly sized and shaped bite out of its west coast? If you could lift the two continents up and reposition them, they would fit together like puzzle pieces. This fact has been noticed by geographers for centuries, and many considered it a simple coincidence. But Wegener asserted that Africa and South America had indeed once been together as part of a greater landmass, but have been drifting away from each other for uncounted geological epochs. He further asserted that all the continents were drifting around in the same way, like chunks of styrofoam floating on the surface of the water in a bird bath, in extreme slow motion. Wegener was considered a crank and a crackpot by most of the rest of the geological establishment, and his hypothesis was widely dismissed. But as the decades passed and the quality of scientific instruments and methods improved, the evidence grew that he was right. This evidence included the magnetic properties of the Earth's crust at various places, fossil distribution, and the real kicker, the discovery of the network of great undersea rifts in the second half of the 20th century. As Wegener's hypothesis matured and gained the status of a full theory, which in science is the way of saying that it's essentially a fact, this concept was given the modern name of the plate tectonics theory. Plate tectonics answers a lot of questions that have puzzled scientists for centuries. For example, one question was, why are there marsupials in Australia and the Americas, but nowhere else? The answer is that Australia and South America were once joined, along with Antarctica. The evolution of simple marsupials began before these continents separated. Once they did separate, the particular conditions that applied on each continent shaped the further evolution of the marsupials there. Antarctica drifted south, where polar temperatures eventually killed off all native land animals. Australia had a lot of empty ecological niches, which the marsupials evolved to fill, which is why you find so many varieties of them there today, like kangaroos, koalas, and wombats. South America, like Australia, at first also had a lot of empty ecological niches, and for tens of millions of years, marsupials evolved to fill many of these niches, generating as wide a diversity of marsupial species as are now present in Australia. Then a mere 3 million years ago, North America collided with South America through the formation of the Isthmus of Panama. placental mammals, which usually can outcompete marsupials for food and other resources, poured across the land bridge into South America. Their presence drove most of the marsupial species to extinction. The only marsupials that remain there today are several dozen species of possum, or more properly, opossum. One of these species migrated north across the land bridge, and that's why there is now one species of marsupial mammal thriving in North America, the common Virginia opossum. That's just one of the questions answered by plate tectonics. Now I want to tell you the sad story of a man who does not accept plate tectonics as settled science. The reason the story is sad is that this man is someone I have admired very much for a long time. You see, I've been a huge comic book nerd since the late 1960s. One of my favorite artists from among dozens of gifted comic book artists is a man named Neil Adams. Not to be confused with the famous British judo champion of the same name. Neil Adams totally revolutionized comic book art, bringing a level of hyper-realism and innovative page design in the medium unheard of to that point. He did work for both DC and Marvel, and is the one person responsible for giving Batman a makeover in the late 60s, transforming him from the campy, ridiculous hero clown popularized in the 60s TV show into the dark, brooding, avenging character that has become familiar to all of us in the last several decades. He did the same sort of makeover for Green Lantern and Green Arrow. His work at Marvel was equally transformative, especially for the title X-Men. I really can't speak enough about how much I loved this man's work, which makes it all the more painful to say that in my early days as a skeptic, I discovered that Neil Adams is also a proponent of some truly bizarre and wacky ideas about the natural world. His signature crackpot notion is that rather than plate tectonics causing the continents to drift apart, the Earth is continually growing larger, and that its ever-stretching surface, like that of a constantly inflating balloon, is spreading out the space between the continents. I will not go into the various and bizarre details of Mr. Adams' hypotheses here. You can check them out at his website, where he has used his fame as an illustrator to draw the eyes of his comic art fans to read his bizarre hypotheses. At every point when Mr. Adams is confronted with the fact that when one detail or another of his ideas is contrary to basic science, he simply and blandly asserts that basic science is wrong. He also proudly proclaims that he has no education or background in science, implying that this gives him some sort of unique perspective. Mr. Adams was a guest on the excellent Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast about a decade ago, where he put forth some of his ideas. He fairly oozed arrogance and condescension to the highly educated hosts of the podcast. I use Mr. Adams as an example to illustrate the point that someone who is brilliant in one area of endeavor is not necessarily always brilliant in other areas. People like Mr. Adams, who are proponents of ideas that have been shown not to work by the laws of science as we know them, are fond of making statements like, "Well, they laughed at Galileo, too." This is a logical fallacy, and it's committed so often by people spouting unfounded wacky ideas that it has its own name, the Galileo Gambit. It's a form of the association fallacy. Noted scientist and science communicator Carl Sagan had this to say about the Galileo Gambit. Quote, "But the fact that some geniuses were laughed at does not imply that all who were laughed at are geniuses. They laughed at Columbus. They laughed at Robert Fulton. They laughed at the Wright brothers, but they also laughed at Bozo the Clown." Mr. Sagan is also famous for a quotation he made that applies directly to this subject. It is so important that it is known as Sagan's Maxim. Sagan's Maxim goes, "Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence." Naturally, the martial arts has had its share of both revolutionary thinkers and Looney Tune oddballs. Many people consider Jigoro Kano, the founder of judo, to be the father of the modern approach to the martial arts. When he introduced the concept of randori, or sparring, to the training regimen of his students, many of his contemporaries mocked him. What some of them used was the tired old rationalization that real fighting techniques are too deadly to be used in any form of safe simulation. He also popularized the use of voluntary submission when grappling, or tapping out, as we refer to it. This, too, was roundly condemned. Many dismissed it because they claimed it fostered a spirit of defeatism when you permitted a student to, quote, surrender, unquote. I assert that in both cases, time has proven Kano right and his detractors wrong. Bruce Lee was widely condemned by the broader martial arts community when he advocated new concepts. One of these was to combine elements of different arts from different cultures, including elements from horror of horrors, barbaric Western martial arts like boxing, wrestling, savate, and fencing. Another heresy supported by Mr. Lee was to update training methods, drawing more from modern exercise science and nutrition, and less from ancient wisdom. These innovations are essentially those followed by modern mixed martial artists 30 years later. Just as with Kano, Bruce Lee's ideas were dismissed as mere fads that would disappear with time. What has faded more with time are the names of most of Bruce Lee's detractors. His ideas live on and continue to affect the modern martial arts world. Elio Gracie asserted that striking skills alone were not sufficient for a complete self-defense skill set. The Gracie family developed a tradition of declaring open challenges to practitioners of other martial arts. The end result of this tradition was the creation by Horian Gracie of the first incarnation of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, to both promote their system and provide empirical evidence for his father's claims. During the early days of the UFC, many of my contemporaries in the martial arts were quick and loud to proclaim that the budding grappling revolution sparked by the Gracies was a passing fad, which would fade with time. But a quarter of a century of martial arts history since then shows that Elio Gracie was right, and that his detractors were wrong. You are most definitely an incomplete fighter without adequate grappling knowledge and skills. But here's the real point. Each of the revolutionary geniuses I mentioned today were grounded in an extensive background education of the subject matter in which they worked, and their claims and work have withstood the scrutiny of those who doubted them. It's very important to remember that for every Copernicus, or Galileo, or Wegener, or Kano, or Lee, or Gracie who comes along and changes the world, there are thousands of others who think that all it takes to be like these geniuses is to be different, to think outside the box. Remember that just because your idea is counter to that of mainstream science, or the establishment, doesn't in and of itself make it a good idea. Such thinking is driven by ego, not by evidence, by arrogance, not by a desire to improve the world. Most people who claim the role of the persecuted genius would do well to spend less time worrying about the persecuted part and spend more time on the genius part. It's good to learn to think outside the box, but it's also good to remember that there's a box there for a reason. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.